Welcome to Banyan Books, Branches of Wisdom, celebrating the joy of bright ideas and heartful lifelong learning. Branches of Wisdom is a series of intimate conversations with the world's most influential authors and visionaries. We explore spirituality and the human mind, ecology and culture. Most episodes are recorded with a live audience. You can join our live events and submit questions to your favorite guests. Check out our upcoming schedule at banyan.com. Since 1970, Banyan Books has been a rich oasis at the crossroads of wisdom and philosophy, offering resources for humanity's evolving paths. We're a locally owned, independent bookstore in the heart of Vancouver's Kitsilano neighborhood. Visit us in person or shop online at banyan.com. Please subscribe, follow, like, and leave your reviews for the podcast. And now, enjoy.
Hello and welcome. My name is Jacob Steele, the events manager for Banyan Books. Tonight, or today, we are delighted to host Judith Orloff, MD, on her new book, The Genius of Empathy. I'd like to begin by first acknowledging that although we have participants joining from around the world, the physical location of Banyan Books is on the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Judith Orloff welcomes your questions. Please type questions into the chat box at any point throughout the event. And a note that your donations help to support these programs to be free for all. We invite you to click on the PayPal link in the YouTube show notes below to donate. So now for introductions. Judith Orloff, MD, is a psychiatrist, an empath, and author of the new book, The Genius of Empathy, which offers powerful skills to tap into empathy as a daily healing practice in your life and relationships. She also wrote the bestseller, The Empath Survival Guide. Dr. Orloff is a New York Times bestselling author and a UCLA clinical faculty member. She synthesizes the pearls of conventional medicine with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, energy, and spirituality. Dr. Orloff specializes in treating highly sensitive people in her private practice. She's been featured on The Today Show, CNN, Oprah Magazine, and The New York Times. Learn more about empaths and empathy at her website, www.drjudithorloff.com. She's here today to speak on her new book, The Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World. And this book has a foreword by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. It's an honor to welcome her today. Please welcome Dr. Judith Orloff.
Hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be here. I love Banyan Books, and thank you for the beautiful intro, Jacob. It was wonderful, as usual, and I'm so glad to be here talking to you about the genius of empathy and what empathy is. We need it more than ever in the world, and I think this book came out at the perfect time with so much going on in the world, and empathy is the medicine that the world needs. And empathy is something that you could find in yourself as a healing act. It's healing energy, the way I'm presenting it in the book. It's not just a nice thing to say to somebody or a nice way to be or just being sensitive. The way I'm presenting empathy and the way I've written about it is that it's the way to get out of your head and into your heart. Because when you're in your head, and this is important, whenever you're exploring empathy, and I'll guide you through it in every aspect of the book, but the empathy usually doesn't come from your head. What's in your head? Fearful thoughts, catastrophic thoughts. I don't see any reason why I should have empathy with anybody or this person. They did me wrong. Why should I have empathy? What should I have empathy for? So you get caught up in this mental conversation, which is, they're good questions and we can talk about how to answer them. But if you really want to find empathy for somebody, you've got to learn how to shift from your head into your heart. Because when I feel empathy for you and what you've been through this morning, let's say, no, it comes from my heart. It's not a thought. It's an energy in the heart. And that heart energy is the healing energy. All right. And so it's important from my point of view to see empathy as a way to heal yourself and a way to generate healing in your relationships and in the world. And so I'm not just presenting it as a good idea or a nice way to be, an ethical way to be, which it is. It's about healing, and we desperately need healing in our world today. I'm a psychiatrist, and I use all my traditional knowledge from my psychiatric training. I went to UCLA for my psychiatric residency, and I went to USC for my medical school years. And so I've had really good training in county hospitals, in private hospitals and nursing homes and drug rehab facilities I worked in for years, drug and alcohol recovery facilities. And so I've had the pleasure and the experience of going around to different kinds of places. And the one block that I've seen that's consistent in all these places is this element of empathy, and how, where does it come in to your healing? How can it heal you? All right. And there's a chapter in here. I think it might be my favorite chapter. My favorite chapters keep changing depending on the day. But today, my favorite chapter is the chapter on self-empathy. And self-empathy, you might think, oh, it's so easy. Of course, I'd want to have empathy for myself. But it's not so easy. And empathy for yourself is the starting point. Then you could have empathy for others, and then you could have empathy for the world. But if you don't come to yourself and start treating yourself a little bit better and stop beating yourself up all the time, because I know that's what most people do, and they those on, you know, have worked on themselves on the spiritual path do it a lot less, but it still happens, where you want to begin to make self-empathy part of your daily life. And I love this chapter because it's a way of taking accountability for your own healing by choosing to activate a certain energy in your body called empathy. Now, when you, if you're at all attracted to this and you want to get into energetic healing of the body, not just the physical healing, but the energetic healing, activating empathy from your heart will begin to spread that energy throughout your body. And then what happens if you're in an empathic state, if you're, you know, with a at a family dinner that maybe isn't that much fun to be at, you're in your heart, your empathy, and it's spreading out to others. So they're feeling the benefit of this and probably relaxing. And then you could send it to the world. You can either take it to the point of global empathy, or you could consciously sit at your meditation space and send out empathy and caring and love to the world. And it will go far, and it will make a tremendous difference. So I think empathy is a key element in all of these situations. And so I just want you to, number one, to realize the empathy is probably not going to come from your head. The head has all kinds of good reasons why not to experience empathy. Like, it's just going to make me weak. It's going to put me in a vulnerable position. I'll just get exhausted from it. If you're an empath, and this book is for empaths, and it's also for non-empaths, people who are not empaths and who are very empathic, but just have a little bit of a different makeup than empaths do. You want to be aware of how empathy increases in your body, the heart. And you want to be able to feel that. And you want to be able to send that energy wherever you are. And you could send it silently. Now, if I go to a dinner and I'm just sitting quietly and coming from my heart and not getting involved with the dramas or the dynamics going on at the table, I'm like a beacon, and you can be too. So empathy allows you to do that, but you have to begin to welcome it into your life. It's not something you have to do. It's something that you are probably attracted to. And the point of this book is to give you practical skills on how to access it, on how to generate it, in order to improve the relationships with yourself, with others, and the world. So this, to me, is the missing piece. And so, you know, we were, Jacob and I were talking beforehand about maybe him being a guinea pig, and I could show you how some of these ideas work. But we came upon, you know, I said, well, how is it hard for you to have empathy with somebody you don't like, or somebody who has different values than you? As that's a really common theme now, as you know, the people who have radically different values, you know, the mind will think, why in the world would I want to have empathy with them, right? You know, why? Why? They're just wrong. They're dangerous. They're wrong. And yeah, you could keep that up if you want, but you know, the world is in these patterns that are not working for them. And what having empathy for, not the beliefs you don't agree with, that's not what I'm suggesting, but having empathy for maybe the narcissistic father who never encouraged his beautiful son to come from the heart, you know, something like that, or he put his son down, whatever caused the son to grow up and be this person, you know, to have empathy for at least that. And why you want to do that is because you don't want to perpetuate the energy of what's going on now in the world. And that's not typically what people are doing. And you want to shift the energy. And in the book, I glorify the power of the individual. You know, I really do. I think you and I, Jacob, everyone as individuals have the power to shift energy in a very big way through empathy, by not just holding on to this resentment, this coal of the resentment that is only going to burn your hand, but finding that little piece of empathy for somebody and allowing them to go, to let go. Now, I love the story by a Dalai Lama that I heard. I mean, he's my hero, and I'm just so honored he wrote the foreword to this book. There's a story where a woman went to visit him in Dharamsala, and they were going to meet somewhere, but he was running a bit late. And so the woman went to a cafe, and in this cafe, she saw a man beating a dog, you know, just a gruesome, horrible thing. And then and when she went with the Dalai Lama, she told him about it and said, you know, what would you say to do in your philosophy? And he says, I feel just as sorry for the man as I do for the dog. No, and you know, if you could get that even a little bit, it's incredible suffering that makes people be violent. It doesn't justify their violence. I'm not at all saying that, but you must know that happy people don't act that way. Happy people don't start wars. Happy people don't blame and shame you. And, get into horrible fights with you or are rageaholics. Happy people don't do that. That's coming from a place of pain. All right. If you're a happy person, you know, pretty happy person, you want something good to come from your interactions. So empathy can help you with that. And there are four types of empathy that I'd like to share with you. Okay. I breathe deeply. My body is relaxed. I am moving towards wellness and ease. I love that. I just came upon it, so I'm going in a nonlinear way. But the four types of empathy that I'd like you to know about, just so you could understand people. There's cognitive empathy, emotional empathy, intuitive empathy, and spiritual empathy. And people have different styles of empathy. And just because somebody isn't an empath and can't relate to you exactly in that way, doesn't mean they can't be your friend or understand you. And so the cognitive empathy, if you think of the attorneys, the brilliant attorneys or the engineers or the debaters, now they may feel empathy through their minds. know, where they think it, thinking empathy, where I, you know, it's genuine, but it does come from their mind. So it doesn't send out the energy that the emotional empath would. But it's a wonderful thing. And sometimes, you know, people put it down, and I wouldn't do that. I think it's a wonderful thing if somebody can express cognitive empathy. And in the book, I go through what are the positives of it and what are the downfalls of it and how to change that. For instance, if somebody has cognitive empathy, they might offer solutions too quickly if you start crying and pouring out your heart in front of them. All right, they might try and fix it right away, which is a big mistake. And I work with a lot of couples on one has cognitive empathy and the other has emotional empathy. And I try and help the one with cognitive empathy to just slow it down, to let their partner express the feelings, whatever they may be, before they start offering solutions. Because if you're the one on the other side and you're still in your feelings, you don't want to hear solutions. You want to hear, wow, I hear what you're saying. You know, I can feel it. So it takes a little tweaking, but the cognitive empathy person can learn to be a bit more sensitive and not be so linear. And then the emotional empath is somebody who I can feel what you're feeling, and they tend to jump into other people's bodies and attune with them and resonate with them to the fullest. But the downside is they might become an emotional sponge and get very tired and exhausted and experience sensory overload because they haven't learned boundaries. So in this book, The Genius of Empathy, I wanted to teach you how to set boundaries so that you don't experience this compassion fatigue that many people are experiencing in our world today. There's so much happening, and there's so many feeling people getting becoming the pain that they're sensing, that we're not as functional as we could be. And so it's very important to learn how to take a step back and observe, don't absorb, is one of the principles in the book. You can observe what's going on in the person, whatever they're going through, but you don't take it on in your own body. There's no need to. People have the misconception that if they take something on, they feel it, they have to take it on and be the martyr and bear the burden. And I'm saying, no, that is not what I'm teaching. I don't want you all to become martyrs. You won't be good for anything after a while. I'm wanting you to be strong, empowered people with big hearts who can have the strength to set a boundary to protect yourself and to have healthy relationships. This is something you must do if you're interested in empathy and expressing empathy. As guilty as you might feel if you set a boundary, because I think that's the main block, people feel guilty, you've got to work through it with somebody. You know, that's not a place you want to just stay. Let's say your parents raised you to believe you have to be compassionate to everyone all the time, 24 hours a day, otherwise you're not a good person. And if you don't do that, you might feel guilty. So you need to work with that, because that's not true. You don't have to feel compassion 24 hours a day for everyone. You have to put a limit on what you give. There's a chapter in here on healthy giving versus codependent giving. And you must reorient your mind to what healthy giving is. It's not giving 200% of the time. It's not giving so you feel sick and you can't function. It's about giving, and it's about self-care and setting boundaries and protecting yourself. Empaths it's like peaceful warrior training. People who have empathy, who don't want to become drained by it, but want to show it. It's peaceful warrior training. And part of that training in the book, I talk about how to set boundaries. That no is a complete sentence. That there's a chapter on empathic listening, how to empathically listen. And that's with all kinds of boundaries. For instance, if you set up a time where you want to listen to a friend, you need to set the time. Let's say you'll listen for 10 minutes. you don't listen for open-ended time. It's a way of setting boundaries. It's 10 minutes. You only stick to one subject. You don't go on to many subjects when you're listening to someone, so you can stay clear and present. All right, so that's important. There's boundary setting in the listening process the way I'm describing it. All right, and so for some reason, I think this is a big topic with this group. So for those of you who are guilty about setting boundaries or feel that it's stopping you from being an empowered, empathic person, let's talk about it, you know, and that you could feel free to ask me about that, because it's something you have to do. You can't get away with it, with not doing it. And if you try, it won't work. All right. So part of, for me, being an empath and listening to so many people as I do in my practice and my workshops, you know, I've had to get very clear on what distance feels good for me, so I don't take something on. Because I'm not interested in taking anything on from other people. You know, I've got enough of my own stuff going on. I don't want to, I don't want any of yours. You know, I say that very, you know, lovingly. But I think it's a healthy attitude to have. You don't want to be taking on other people's stuff because it's none of your business. Basically, you have your life, you have your issues. You want to focus on those. And you can have compassion and empathy for another person. You don't have to take on their suffering. Observe, don't absorb. How do you do this? You take a step back. You know, you don't want to be on top of somebody when they're telling you something that's very painful. As the closer you are to somebody, the more you'll energetically pick it up. And even if you take a step back, that will give you a little bit of distance. So you could observe, don't absorb. This is not you. You know, people have a problem with this because they get enmeshed with the other person. You have to keep a separate identity going and realizing they're going through their path. I'm here listening to them. And I want to be of maximal service to this person. And what that means is setting my boundary, observe, don't absorb, listen with as much empathy as I can without being intrusive, and offer support, hold space. There's a chapter on holding space for people. How do you do that? And how do you get yourself out of the way? How do you communicate empathically with loved ones and coworkers? Now, what's the skill here? Now, how do you do this? And there are two other kinds of empathy that I just want to go over too. It's the emotional empath, which we talked about, cognitive empath, and there's also the intuitive empath, where you might be, or intuitive empathy, you might be the type of person who has the kind of empathy where you tune in with your intuition. You get a gut feeling, your energy goes up, your energy goes down, you're kinesthetic. That's, you get knowings and sight, smells, sounds, impressions. So you get a lot of nonlinear knowledge coming in. And sometimes people are overwhelmed with this. And so, you know, part of being an intuitive empath or having intuitive empathy is to learn how to slow down the flow. Because in the beginning, especially, it might come really fast and it's too much. So you want to have an inner dialogue and say, could this please slow down? It's too much for me to assimilate. And may it be helpful so I can understand it. So you can talk to yourself in that way. And then there's the spiritual form of empathy. And what that is, it's very interesting, where there are those people who predominantly look at others through a spiritual lens, and they see the best in people. They're always seeing the best, what they can give and where their hearts are and but they sometimes get into trouble because they don't see the dark side as well in somebody. You know, we all have a dark side. You know, human nature is glorious and loving, and it's brutal as well. So we all carry that which sometimes, you know, gets people into resistance because they don't want to think that they could do anything as horrible as these other people are doing. But, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, we're genetically encoded the same way, every human. And so we all have the potential to choose, you know, the difficult path, the violent path, the resentful path, the bitter path, or the loving path, the empathic path. You know, we have this choice and we have this battle inside of ourselves, you know, because we're human. You know, if you just look at the world and the history of the world, you know, all we do is go to war and it obviously isn't working. So at least it is, you know, it's obvious to me. It isn't obvious to a lot of people, but it's not working. But empathy is the key to shift us out of that mode, whether we're at war with ourselves, which means beating yourself up and saying negative things about yourself, and not being your friend, your own friend. As many people bludgeon themselves, and you know, they could have everything on the outside. I mean, I work with, you know, patients here in LA. Man, they have everything. You know, you think you have a list, a wish list of what you want. They all have that. And for certain people, it doesn't help at all because they haven't, they're still so brutal with themselves. And so the healing path is teaching them empathy for themselves when they never had it before. And so it's a beautiful path and everyone can find it. Everyone, except I want to make one caveat on that. There's a chapter in here on narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths. And these are people with empathy deficient disorder. All right. This means they don't have empathy as we know it. And they're not wired to have empathy as we know it. And this is a hard fact for a lot of people who are so loving and empathic and healers to get. All right. That's why I wrote this chapter. I've written some about narcissism before. But I wanted to be crystal clear for you in this topic so you go towards the love and not towards these people, all right? These people are very, very destructive if they're full-blown narcissists, sociopaths, or psychopaths. And they're extremely seductive, extremely seductive. So if you're prone to seduction, you have to be really careful. And I always encourage, you know, all of my empathic patients, somebody is turning on the juice and seducing you and love bombing you, just look at it as a red flag at first. I mean, it might be a perfectly fine person who's loving and it's just their nature to do that, but usually not. Regular people don't do that, you know, just kind of, they don't love bomb you. And what is love bombing? Do you all know what love bombing is? It's about sending an enormous amount of warm, fuzzy love energy your way and pumping it towards you and making you feel so special and so important that, you know, and presenting themselves as I'm the solution to your problems, whatever problems you might have. No, I can help you with, I can do. So it's like they're saviors. So it's, you want to be very cautious of these people. And I want you to read this chapter and so that you can diagnose narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths. You don't need to be a psychiatrist to do this. I want you to be able to diagnose them in your life. So at least you have a choice of whether or not to get involved with them. All right. They have empathy deficient disorder. All right. Meaning no empathy. As much as you empaths might want to heal them, it's very hard. They're not wired the same way. So, you know, as much as I can encourage you to go towards loving people who aren't so seductive and who don't gaslight you and make you think you're crazy over years of being with them, you know, where they, you say, oh, the sky is so beautiful and blue today. They say, what's wrong with you? It's not blue, it's purple. What's wrong? Do you have vision problems? You know, what's wrong with your perception? Yeah, so, you know, you get the gist of it. You know, they make you feel like you're 2 inches tall. And if somebody talks to you that way enough, you begin to believe it. A lot of people do. And so it's a point I talk about in The Genius of Empathy. And if you tend to be attracted to narcissistic types, if you were brought up by narcissistic parents, or you've had narcissistic past relationships, beware, spend some time with these chapters and memorize what the symptoms are of, the narcissist or the sociopath. And they're pretty alike, which is a good thing. So one sort of is a lot like the other. But you recognize them in your life. And having empathy is being accountable for your choices. When I say having empathy, you have empathy for yourself in these circumstances. You say to yourself, I am not going to submit you to this. Now, even if you're lonely, even if you haven't been with somebody for a long time, and here comes this shining narcissist in armor, don't do it. Just wait a little longer. Just don't go there. And I say that knowing that people do go there, because it feels so good. It feels in the beginning. But if you do that, I suggest that you, in the beginning, create a conflict and see how they respond to it, because that's a way for a narcissist to show their full colors, because they don't like it when you don't do things according to their plan. That's when they start to have their true nature come up. So just do something like, say, I can't go out with you tonight because I have plans with my friends, and see how they react. If they say, oh, okay, I'll miss you. I look forward to the next time we can be together. That's nice. And that's not too narcissistic. But most people would say, well, you don't respect our relationship very much. We're just building it. And you're already saying you can't go out with me. What's wrong with you? Don't you care about us? Are your friends more important than me? That's a big thing they always say. So you get your evidence. I'd like you to test it out so you can be smart. So go to chapter 8 on narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths. Very important information. And then, in terms of what I want to offer you from this book, there's so much wonder that empathy can bring. And there's so much beauty and so much healing that comes from the heart if you could bring empathy into action, just one empathic act a day, even to build up your own healing system. It's a beautiful thing. Let me just read you a little bit from the ending of the book before we take your Q&As. What many astronauts come to deeply understand once they see our glorious Earth from space is that we are one world and always have been. As philosopher Frank White beautifully states, there are no boundaries or borders on our planet except those we create with our minds. And the ideas that divide us begin to fade from orbit and the moon. This realization can help us feel more related. If you know who you are and can remind each other of this, we remain stronger together. You are an angel, you are a scoundrel, you are a gorgeously imperfect human with a perfect soul. You can know this with empathy. Don't ever forget its importance and loving power. This is such a simple secret, but hidden from many people. May this book inspire you to think about empathy from new points of view and to see yourself and others from the most tender perspective. I presented a range of tools to access empathy in many circumstances. Find the ones that appeal to you. Use them every day. Humans are often difficult to deal with, but we are wild and beautiful, and we can grow fast into our brightness if we allow ourselves to. Take good care of yourself and each other. Try not to make things so complicated. Ultimately, it all really comes down to love. So that's the energy and the sentiment of the end of the book. You know, it has an end and it has a beginning. And sometimes people read this book by going to the chapter that they resonate with the most. Like some people go to self-empathy because they need it desperately because they're beating themselves up so much. You know, or some people go to healthy giving and read the section on people pleasing and codependency. Some people go towards a section on woundmate relationships when people are attracted to each other from their wounds, not from love, and how to, you know, heal from those. So there, you know, I get into many, many topics about empathy in relationships, empathy with yourself, empathy at work, empathy with difficult coworkers. So it's, I just want to emphasize, it's very, very practical. And so it's not just a bunch of theoretical stuff. And the only thing I haven't shared with you is my passion for the neuroscience of empathy, which is so amazing. There's just, I'll tell you one aspect of it. There's something called the Mother Teresa effect. And what this is that if you watch somebody who is showing an act of empathy, if they're helping someone across the street or whatever you're seeing, a beautiful act of empathy, if I were to draw your blood at that point, your immunity will have gone up suddenly. The antibodies will have gone up. Your stress hormones will have gone down, and your vagus nerve will have become activated, which is the nerve that relaxes you and calms you. So empathy creates physical changes in your body that you really want to support. And so if that's just witnessing an act, just imagine if you lived empathy every day, all the beautiful ways you can shift your biochemistry into a more positive, healthy human. You know, it's empathy is only help your health as long as you set boundaries, protect yourself, observe, don't absorb, and are discriminating with your self-care. When you're tired, you have to rest. And I have sections in the book on what happens if you're a caregiver, which is, you know, a bit of a different circumstance. You're put into situations that can be much more exhausting if you're helping a loved one heal from an illness. And so it's important to practice self-care and have little breaks from the loved one so that you can walk by the creek and you can look up at the stars, or you could just go to sleep, whatever you want to do. But you need to have that replenishment as far as your own self-empathy when you're a caregiver to somebody. So I think... on that note, I'd like to open up the Q&A, and I just want to say, if you want to reach me, I'm at drjudithorloff.com, traveling around, doing some in-person events, and you know, just if you want to be on my Empath newsletter, just join it on my website. Okay, Jacob, would you like to come back on?
yes, so we have lots of questions coming in. I'll start out with one from, just looking for it. Just from Aaron. Aaron asks, Dr. Orloff, what kind of empathy do, in general, HSPs have, highly sensitive people?
HSPs can have emotional empathy. They could have intuitive empathy, much less so cognitive empathy, because HSPs are feelers, and they tend to get overloaded by noise, smells, sounds, excessive talking, too much stimulation. And so I think HSPs come from their heart. But it's important that HSPs know that you don't have to be with other people, meaning friends or partners who are HSPs as well. I mean, you might feel more comfort with that, but you might not. I mean, I prefer being with a partner who isn't an empath, because I find it a lot more grounding for me. So you all have to decide what's good for you and listen to your intuition. But I like that question about HSPs.
There's a another question. Actually, this is from Aaron as well. We'll get to everyone's question, but or as many as we can. If one is brought up abused, how do we bring empathy to these kids / young adults? They don't grow up with empathic role models of any kind. And how to retrain these young adults to learn to be empathetic.
Are they still kids?
It said young adults.
Oh, young adults. Okay. Modeling. Modeling is the best way. And I don't know, is she working with them in a therapeutic setting, or what's the deal? Are they her kids?
Maybe she can type in and see. I can see if she's listening still.
Okay, but if you're a parent, the best way to teach empathy is to model it and to show how you can have empathy for your spouse and other people. To see where you're struggling to find it is important, that they need to see that you want it, you know, that you're not just going to slip into arguing, let's say, and blaming and not being accountable for your own feelings. You're going to be more, let me try and understand this. This is a little hard for me, but I really want to. You know, when they see that, they learn the verbiage, they learn the body language. But if they see fighting and if they hear voices arguing all the time, that gives them a different message. No. And so it's important, if you want to teach empathy to those who haven't had it in their early upbringing, you need to talk to them about it. And sometimes they might not want it because it's too vulnerable. You know, if they showed empathy, maybe they were beaten. No, but you have to help them through that and say, you know, the situation is different now. You're not going to be beaten for having empathy, but it's you deserve to have love in your life. And this is one way of developing it in yourself in a very smart way. So they're young adults. You could talk to them that way and deal with all the resistances. You know, it's fine. Whatever they say, all the reasons for not wanting to do it, that's fine. But then you can say, well, what do you like about it in me? When you see us interacting, what do you see? You know, when you have an empathic couple or an empathic workplace, empathic leadership, there's a chapter in the book on that. So the best way is to show it. If you can't model it, if you talk about it but can't model it, won't teach anything.
Thank you. This is you did address a lot of these, but I'll read out what she wrote and see what you think. You might spur some thoughts. She says, Lauren says, I've been so hurt from attracting narcissists. I'm in recovery working on pointing empathy inward. But how do I connect outward safely? I deeply want to connect, but keep getting toxic people. I continue to let them go. I even had to go low contact with my family, but struggle with deep loneliness. I've tried empathy toward evil people. They just exploit it.
Yes, but what did you have empathy for? See, that's the tricky thing with empathy. What you want to have empathy for with narcissists, and it may be way premature for you to do that at this point with your family. It's not, you're not quite ready for it, but you want to have empathy for their wounds, you know, and their lack of empathy and crippled hearts. You don't want to have empathy for them needing to beat other people up or to be abusive. You don't have empathy for that, but you have empathy for, you know, the horrible crippling that makes them want to do that. You see, and what was the question again? I just got really involved with that answer.
There were a couple things in there. One was, how do I connect outward safely?
How do you connect outward?
Outwardly in a safe way.
You observe people and their behavior. And since you're attracted to narcissists, you need to be particularly careful to have a checklist of narcissistic traits. And when you meet new people, you have to check them off to see if they're these same people, so that you don't go there. You have to take contrary action. It's great you're in recovery. That will help you a lot. You might want to go to Al-Anon. That will help you a lot too in your relationships. You know, let go, let God, you know, but your main challenge will be saying no to the narcissist and not getting involved with them. And there's a technique I talk about in the book called the gray rock method that you can use with narcissists. And that means you're a gray rock. Have you ever seen a big gray rock? No, I think they're wonderful. No, they're just great, but they're solid. They're not emotionally reactive. They're strong. They're grounded. They don't give away anything. They're just a gray rock, right? And I love being a gray rock. I think it's fun. But it really does work with people, because when you're not being triggered by narcissists, you're not giving them what's called their supply. And you don't want to give them their supply. You want to give them nothing. And the reason, one reason, is because they'll get bored with you and go on to somebody else. Now, if you can keep that up and be consistent and just say, oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Or, no, you know, if you have kids in common, it's a lot more complicated. But some people don't have any links, you know, other than your heart. So, you know, the cold turkey technique, you know, is very important, so you don't get seduced back in. And to set boundaries with narcissists, they really don't like those. You know, they. But you have to say, this is, you know, I can only text you. I don't want to go on the phone with you. And then they give you all this guilt, or they try and gaslight you. And you have to be strong and firm and just say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Bye. You know, and just realize that narcissists are into power, and empaths and people who are open to empathy are into love. All right. It's a different dynamic on how they operate. All right. When someone's into power, just look in our world scale. Look at all these people who are into power. Obviously, they're not into love. You know, they want more power. That's what they want. And they're empathy deficient people. All right. But you want to go towards the people who can love you. That's important. And listen to you and be a friend to you. And not be a narcissist who's only going to cut down your self-esteem and hurt you in so many ways. The narcissists hurt empathic, sweet, loving, healing people in a lot of ways, as the empaths don't have the same defenses that narcissists, like, walled off. You know, they're totally walled off. And any kind of empathy that they show you, or you think they're showing you, it's not real. It's just to get something. No, it's just to reel you in, or it's a whole different personality. And I'm so sorry, you know, that they're that way. But, you know, I really want to encourage you to see people for who they are. You know, that's really important. And whether you like it or not, it's like, don't go there if you can help it. Okay, let's go on to the next one.
Lauren was also she's wondering about how to connect and find safe people as well.
That's a great question. I would go right to the chapter on healthy giving versus codependent giving. But the way you find safe people is, you know, the signs of the narcissist. So you're looking out for those. You're not becoming lax. You know, when you want to be aware if you're attracted to them. You know, not to get involved. But then you want to be with loving people. Where do you find loving people? All right, this is a good place. You know, at Banyan Books, they're very loving. You know, they're very loving. You just start maybe with their groups, you know, or whatever their events. And the people who they would attract would most likely be similar. You know, the energy that one sets in such a beautiful store, and it's the longest existing largest store in the world. I mean,
well, maybe the largest spiritual store, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's a lot of energy there, and it's established itself. So I'm just using this as an example, or you can go to mindfulness meditation retreats. You can go to people who love the earth and go maybe the Sierra Club or hiking. Or do something to save the earth, or go on sacred tours and enjoy the sacredness of the world. Those are more likely places that you're going to meet people that are good people, you know, or just at work. Look around for the simple, nice people who are not putting on a big show, but but who do their work, who show up, who smile at you. And it might be nice to have tea with them, you know, just the simple, those are the people I like. You know, I get overwhelmed if somebody's all flashy. It's just not my thing, you know. And but just to look for simple acts of goodness. You know, sometimes I look at people and I observe them and their behavior. You know, how are they with the parking lot attendant? How are they, you know, with people who aren't going to give them anything, you know, necessarily? How are they with little children? How are they with older people? You know, I like to see, you know, I just like to observe that, because it tells you a lot about people when they're, people will say all kinds of things, you know, that may or may not be true. But if you watch their actions, you know, that's, you might discover something beautiful. And if you're looking for love, you look for people who give back, you know, to the earth, or you give back to an organization. So I know I've worked with people who are on online dating, and I've gone through, they send me the pictures of the people to tune into, you know, and I teach them to tune into these pictures. And you have to go to the description of the person to see what they give back to the world. You know, it's very, you know, you want to look at that, and you want to see how they are with their families and how they are with their dogs, you know, and it's just a way of being discerning. And you don't go for the flash, you go for simplicity. You know, that's how you find loving people. In my experience, that's been helpful.
There's a question from Marianne. How do you live with someone who will get angry at you or distance you when you get emotional? I'm not in a position to leave the situation. I have kids and I'm a stay-at-home mom at the moment.
She's a stay-at-home mom, and who's the person who's
Someone she's living with.
Someone like a roommate or a husband?
It sounds like, but maybe she could type in if she wishes.
Yeah, it depends. For a roommate, you know, kick them out. You know, that's like not acceptable to treat you that way. But if it's a loved one, you need to have some talks. I mean, this is where a coach might come in to help you, you know, the two of you get through this. But it's unacceptable behavior to treat you that way.
She said husband.
Yeah, husband. Okay, husband. Husband needs to be educated. You know, I would love it if the husband was willing to work with the coach or go into therapy, because this is a block for him. And it isn't because he doesn't love you. It's because something happened to him that made him intolerant of the way you're responding, because it reminds him of somebody else, you know, his upbringing. So that's all I can say right now. But you need to work with him on that, because it's not really tolerable for you to live with that on an ongoing basis, because it could get into the realm of abuse, depending on how intense he is about it. But I would work with him on it. And if you're ready, you know, maybe you don't want to bring it up at all. I don't know. But you brought it up with me. And so it makes me feel that it's very important to you to clear this and to see what's stopping you from being honest with him about that. And what you don't want to do is not show him empathy. You want to try and show him empathy. You might want to talk to him about how he could talk to you. You know, I would love to understand you more, but I feel kind of lost when you express yourself emotionally. I shut down, or whatever his point of view is. You know, you want to give him a chance to express it, and you need to tell him how important it is that he respect this part of you. And you'll see if he's able to accept it. But my intuition says he could benefit from a little coaching. You know, it's a little bit of inexperience on his part too. But it does need to be addressed. And it would be a lovely home environment if you didn't have to deal with that.
There's a couple questions, or one question that I have actually is I've been wondering about, because I probably am a highly sensitive person, and it's the relationship between like feeling empathy and a kind of like a hypervigilance and fear, like or lack of boundary. Like I feel often that I can pick up energy so strongly, just like without wanting to or meaning to. And so I had like two theories. Like one was that maybe it's just the filter that I'm seeing things through, like the belief that things are not safe, so I'm being like vigilant. Or the other one is maybe something about like chakra fields, like needing to strengthen like the lower, like the root chakras or something, solar plexus, in order to feel like a bigger or a field. These are the theories I'm working with. But what do you think about the relationship between these things, fear and empathy?
Yeah, I think you're a feeler of energy. And I think you have been one since you were a baby. So you came out that way. It's just how you process the world. Some people are more sensitive to energy than others. So it's a positive trait that you have. However, you need to learn how to protect yourself a little bit more from other energies. You're very compassionate and you give people the benefit of the doubt, like in a huge way. And you need to bring that in a little bit. It's not realistic. You know, you're leaving yourself open to things that are not good for you in certain circumstances. So you just need to tweak it a little bit. You respond energetically. You know, I empathically feel your heart, and you want to be empathic with everybody, as I can feel it. And you have to observe, don't absorb, and be a little less empathic with people. You know, sometimes I prescribe more empathy, especially for yourself, always for yourself. But some people can give too much empathy, too much benefit of the doubt, too many times. You need to tighten that up. You know?
What I wonder, though, is often in order to create such a distance, I will just distance myself. So I'll just kind of retreat.
Yeah.
So I kind of can be actually pretty avoidant in a lot of ways, too. It's either one or the other, because I don't seem to have find the middle.
Right. Well, I think the book can help you find the balance in between, because that's what you want, is the balance. I mean, you could always just go away from the world and, you know, that's it. And a lot of empaths do that I know. They just give up, want to be with their animals and their own sweet life and forget about the world, you know. But depends on what your mission is here. I think you could find a more balance with it, you know, to be able to feel empowered inside of yourself. And to say no to whatever it is, and to say, I'm not going to spend too much time with this. This doesn't feel good. You know, it's not okay with me. I can't stick around if you're going to dump anger on me, you know, and learn how to set healthy boundaries, really to say it with the proper tone of voice, and to just limit the 15 seconds maybe. Oh, yeah. And if you have any, memories of your mother or early upbringing that overlaps into this, I would look at that too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been looking at that.
Yeah.
Well, we've come to the time.
Okay.
And so thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and empathy. And I wanted just to remind everybody, you can purchase Dr. Orloff's book, and actually all of her books at Banyan. Just visit banyan.com. And also you can find out more about all of her work and workshops and things at drjudithorloff.com. Any final words you want to share?
And if you'd like to sign up for the Empath Support Newsletter, which I send out once a month, you can do that on my website as well. And I invite you to come join me on the journey of empathy on my book tour. And you could tune in if I do online events or some in person. I'd love to meet some of you. I'm giving one in Los Angeles at Vroman's, which is a classic bookstore as well in Pasadena, on May 8th. And so you could just check out my schedule. And I hope I've inspired you to, you know, begin to incorporate empathy into your life in a very smart way, with boundaries, and with protection, and attracting those with an open heart, so you can have that circle around you, which is the best. You know, empaths want connection. And if you have loving friends who you can trust, they're not perfect. You know, no one's ever perfect, so that's okay. But to have loving people around you bear witness to your life as you, you know, move on along on this path. So it's been delightful being here with Banyan, and you've been a wonderful host, Jacob. Doing this with you. And thank you, everybody, for attending. And I hope to see you along the path soon.
Thank you. Until next time.
Okay. Till next time.
Thanks for joining us for Branches of Wisdom, a podcast of Banyan Books and Sound, Canada's spiritual and healing resource since 1970. Our podcast producer is Jacob Steele. Watch all our conversations on YouTube by searching for Banyan Books, or listen on your favorite podcast platform. Please subscribe, follow, like, and leave your reviews and comments. We love to hear from you. For all our live events, books, and more, visit us at banyan.com.